everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's October 2022, and this is episode 309, which is a conversation about the Evil television series, which is streaming on Paramount Plus. Today's guest is Cole Burgett, who is a graduate of Dallas Theological Seminary and the Moody Bible Institute. Cole teaches classes in systematic theology and Bible exposition and writes extensively about theology and popular culture. Cole has written an online exclusive television series review for the Christian Research Journal. His article is called "The Devil and Kristen Bouchard, A Series Review of Evil." Our subscribers can read his web-exclusive review at our website, equip.org, for free. But if you do not subscribe, please go to our website at equip.org to subscribe to our journal, and you will gain access to this online exclusive content and be able to read this very insightful review. Cole, it's good to have you on again.
Always good to be here. Thank you.
Well, as I mentioned, today we're having a conversation about the television series that's on Paramount Plus called Evil, and it's kind of essentially, you know, an X-Files adjacent series in that there is this supernatural element and this religious element, and it's being investigated. Now, this series originally debuted on network television on CBS in 2019, but then because of low ratings, it was removed from CBS, but then picked up by Paramount Plus for its season two and its current season, season three, which was released in 2022. And then also it's been greenlit for season four. So there's a season four coming to Paramount Plus. And this series centers on a woman who's a skeptic and a forensic psychologist, and she becomes an ally with this Roman Catholic seminarian to investigate these purported supernatural incidents that have been happening. And it's been quite successful in terms of critics who rave about it, as well as just fans. It's got some very ardent fans giving it high ratings on internet rating sites. So the fans there are very loyal. And of course, this series, just as you might tell from its title, Evil, focuses quite a bit on demonic activity. So demons is a very strong, if not the central thing that is being looked into and discussed and explored in this series. And I would say that if it had a rating as it is right now in a streaming service, I would call it hard R or mature due to its content matter and sexuality that's portrayed. Now, I will say that much of this probably would be quite profane to most Christians, but the reason why we're covering this series is not so much to say that Christians should watch it, but that they would know what it's about and how to interact with non-Christians, since there are so many fans of the show. And there are certainly a lot of topics that could come up as a result of some of the things that are portrayed in the series. So I want to just ask Cole a little bit more. I just briefly touched on this series, but tell us a little bit more about the plot line and what the series is about, and basically just get us going to what it covers and who the main characters are.
Sure. So as you mentioned, a forensic psychologist who would be Dr. Kristen Bouchard, and this individual who starts off as a seminarian, but over the course of the series becomes a priest. And that is David Acosta, who is this former journalist. And the series really kicks off when David, who works for the Catholic Church as an assessor, reaches out to Dr. Bouchard for assistance in, assessing. And what he assesses are these claims that people send the Vatican, or just the church in general, of demonic activity, demonic oppression, demonic possession, something like that. And so the real X-Files parallels come out when, in the whole believer-skeptic dynamic that the X-Files made perfected and made so popular. So Dr. Bouchard, as a forensic psychologist, is what we would call a hard skeptic. She is not religious at all. She is married with four daughters, and she has no affiliation with the church. She is an avowed atheist type thing. And David, obviously, is a seminarian, has his own religious convictions, very much put him in line with Catholicism. And there is a third member of the team who is sort of shafted when it comes to just the advertising. You never see him in any of the promotional materials. But this character is Ben Shakir, and he's one of the more interesting characters in the show. He is a lapsed Muslim who really doesn't, I think when the series begins in the first season, he doesn't really believe in anything. But his beliefs are kind of challenged as the show goes on. And he more or less works as their technical expert and stuff like that. So the dynamic that really carries the series is the interplay between Dr. Bouchard and Ben, who are sort of on the side of left brain rationalism, and then David. So there are a lot of what I call interesting moments as you watch Evil, where you have these three characters sort of have conversations with each other about the nature of evil, about what could really be going on in these situations they're investigating. And that stuff is interesting. That being said, it is worth pointing out that the show is, especially once it moves to streaming services, becomes very profane, sort of jarringly so, especially coming out of the first season, which was a network show, which was very tame in a sense. And so that's really the gist of the show. The overarching villain, if you want to call him that, is this character named Leland Townsend, who's played by Michael Emerson, which people recognize from Lost. And you don't really know what role he is, what role he plays, if he's possessed, if he's not possessed, if he's just a psychopath, if he's all of the above. So sort of like their investigation into these things and then Leland sort of pulling the strings from behind the scenes, that really forms the core drama of the series. And so that's a little bit about Evil and what's going on in the show.
Well, as I mentioned, this is not necessarily a series that we're saying that Christians should watch because, as you said, in the move to streaming, it got very graphic and it's probably not something that people should watch. I myself fast-forwarded through one episode and it is definitely not a show that I would watch. I did not watch it, but this is a show that deals heavily with demons and demonic activity because of the nature of, you know, the job of one of the characters who is investigating different claims of demonic activity for the Roman Catholic Church. So this question really goes beyond this series, but it seems that there's a lot of, you know, horror movies that involve sexuality or like demonic themes or just really graphic violence. And when we talk about the genre of horror movies and series that this could fit into, how should Christians grapple with that? Is that something that they should ever see? And how should they interact with people that are fans of this? I mean, around this time of year, you know, it's October, there are so many people who are fans of just kind of those slasher movies or those teens go to camp and then they're getting murdered movies that are, you know, sprinkled in with sexuality or there's demonic activity, or even if it's something more quote unquote tame, like back in the day in the 1980s, Poltergeist, where there's ghosts and things like that. There's all these kinds of films and TV series in this genre. And so how should Christians even interact with them or think about them?
Yeah, this is a great question. The way that I sort of approach this, I say, well, on one level, I think the horror genre is one of the, it can be one of the most thoroughly Christian genres out there. And the reason I start with that is because it really begins with the basic assumption that evil is evil. There are so many genres out there that types of genres out there that sort of traffic in subverting those ideas or complicating those ideas, or playing with morality. And the horror genre is unique, really, in that it in the horror genre, black is still black and white is still white, meaning it sort of traffics in getting its drama and getting its storytelling out of the idea that evil exists and is a force to be reckoned with. And in that sense, I think you actually can tell very thoroughly Christian stories within the context of this genre. And I think you've seen that over time with not just secular writers, but with Christian writers. There's a very popular substrata of Christian writers who write horror stories, and names like Frank Peretti and Ted Dekker may come to mind. But beyond that, just a lot of classic, what we call Gothic horror, has very deeply religious convictions. I was talking with someone recently about Dracula, which is one of my favorite books. And this lady, who's been a good mentor to me throughout the years, said that, I didn't know this until she told me, but she said that her mother actually gave her Dracula and told her to read it. And when she gave it to her, told her that this is a thoroughly religious book. When's the last time anybody has ever talked about Dracula as being thoroughly religious? But when you read it, it really is. So all that to say, I preface the question this way, and all that to say that I think there is a way in which the horror genre can be approached by Christians and who can really interact with it and really have an interesting perspective on it and really get stuff out of it.
I need your help with something, and that is to partner with us to continue to get the word out, especially about our journal and subscribing to it, because we don't want our journal to be the best kept secret of very thoughtful theological content for the concerned layperson that also deals with how to defend your faith and also how to think through walking faithfully with Christ in your relationship with Him and all the different topics that we bring to you every week on the Postmodern Realities podcast. And the best way you can do that, if you're already a subscriber, is to gift a subscription to someone in your network. That could be a student that you know, or your youth pastor, or your pastor, or someone on the pastoral staff of the church that you attend, or maybe it's a family member or friend who would be very grateful to have this thoughtful theological content because they are also a concerned layperson who are interested in the topics that we cover. Another way that you can help us, as always, as I say, help us with the algorithm and rate or review the podcast on Apple Podcasts, and especially written reviews are really helpful because people read those and wonder if this content is for them, and that people have discovered the podcast just through doing that. Of course, you can always help us out by giving us a tip too, if a subscription or gift subscription's not in your budget right now. And you can easily do that at our newly designed website, equip.org. You will see journal, click on that, Postmodern Realities, click on that. And one of our more than 300 episodes, any of those landing pages, you will find a link where you can give us a tip. But we'd like you to spread the word through your network and consider, even this holiday season, giving some gift subscriptions to the people who would really be appreciative of this content. So thank you for all the ways you partner with us. You know, I was thinking of Scott Derrickson. I don't know if people know of him. He is a graduate of Biola, and back in 2005, he directed this movie called The Exorcism of Emily Rose, which kind of has a very similar premise to this one in a very different direction. You know, there's this self-proclaimed agnostic skeptic who is, you know, interacting with this priest and they're, you know, investigating this thing. So I think there is some good exploration of this. And obviously, this particular show is not written by Christians.
Right. And I would say to add on to that, I actually really, really do enjoy that film. But along those lines, Paul Schrader, who is, you know, some type of subspecies of Christian by his own admission, and a man of some kind of faith, he did a prequel to The Exorcist called Dominion that I'm thinking is only available on DVD. I think you can probably find that out there. That's a very, very good film that deals with content like this. So I, like you said, I think there's good explorations of it out there. However, I will say, and this is what I tell, usually students in the classroom whenever we're talking about horror films or I'm teaching on this topic, that everyone gets different mileage out of it. A perfectly acceptable response to this is, I'm not going to watch it. And I know people who are like that. I know I've met many students who are like that, who simply say, you know, I don't want to watch this stuff. I can't put myself in those shoes and do that. And that's a perfectly fine response. I think everybody gets different mileage out of it. That being said, there are certain shows and films that I would, on, you know, I personally would tell a Christian, it's really not worth your time to watch. And as highly regarded as Evil is, and as many rave reviews as it has, this is one of those shows where I genuinely do not think a Christian has any obligation at all to waste their time with it. It's just not, it doesn't really say anything thoughtful. It doesn't say anything, I think, interesting. And to be honest, you know, the comparisons to The X-Files are there, and that's, those are comparisons that other reviewers have made, and they're there for a reason. If you really want to watch a show that is thoughtful and does interact with this stuff on a really profound level, I would point someone to The X-Files. I think it's infinitely more nuanced. I think it's infinitely more thoughtful. The creator, Chris Carter, of that show described The X-Files as a search for God. And so I think it's really interesting. And you would kind of watch Evil and hope that Evil would be like that, that it would be that show, but it's really not. It really isn't. And as much as it tries to tackle the topic of evil in a 21st century context, and it has some interesting things to say about technology and how that plays a role in it, it really doesn't say a lot. In an effort to sort of not step on too many toes and give everybody a seat at the table, it ends up not really defining what evil is, and therefore can't say anything definitive about it. And I think that's just an interesting thing to note. So should Christians watch this kind of stuff? Well, I don't think, you know, Christians should watch, you know, anything they don't really want to watch, just as I would say to anybody else. But if the question is, are there better ways for people, especially Christians, to spend their time, or if they are interested in this subgenre, better things for them to watch, the answer is absolutely.
I will say, I just made a comment that this was written by non-Christians, but I do want to point out that this series was created by a husband and wife team, and the husband is a practicing Roman Catholic. So, like you said, there is somebody who, I don't know how often he goes to mass or how, you know, how religious he is, but he is someone who is practicing. So, well, one of the things that I find very jarring about this series, and you can see it in the preview, and which is why I fast-forwarded through the first episode and thought, yikes, this is not for me, is just how much sexuality comes to bear in the show. And so why is it? I mean, especially when I saw the preview of this show, it's like, oh, this is like Incubus and Succubus kind of stuff coming on. So what do you think about the series and portraying so much sexuality in it? And why do you think that it leans so heavily on sexual content, specifically on Paramount Plus? Now, a lot of cable series in general, no matter what the topic is, try to lean heavily on sexual content, even if it's something that's like historical that wouldn't have sexual content. It kind of seems like the thing these days. But do you think that's reflective of where we are as a culture that is just kind of, you know, that just has to be part of, like I said, cable series. It's a cable series. Well, we have to get that in there. Or is it really an integral part to the plot?
This is a good question. Yeah. To be honest, I think it's just reflective of where we are as a culture in general. Like you said, it seems to be all the rage nowadays, these shows that can ramp up the sexual tension in very explicit detail. And that's one of the things that I think hurts the show, because in the first season, it was still under network censorship. And though sexuality was an important part of that first season, it's nowhere near as blatant as it is when the show moves to streaming. I think, you know, you and I were laughing fairly early on I think I told you in the at the beginning of the second season when it first moved to streaming, you could see that they were actually dubbing in curse words that just weren't there. And I thought that was the funniest thing ever, right? You don't even have to have these. They're clearly not even what the characters are saying, but you're dubbing them in just to get away with it, just because you can, because it's on streaming. And I thought that was just so unnecessarily funny. But it just shows you what you can get away with on a streaming service. And so the sexual content comes in. It is, I think, integral to the plot. And this is one of the things that Evil does that I sort of like. It seems to be able to make a really profound connection between sin and an expression of sexuality. And I think that's something our culture really is trying to redefine right now. And I watched the three seasons of the show, and this did jump out to me. As much as it puts sexuality as a focus, I honestly can't think of an episode that deals explicitly with homosexuality, which I think is fascinating considering the content. But most of the instances it comes up, it's heterosexual, but it's sexuality gone awry. And so especially in the second season, there are moments where characters sort of stumble further over into what we might call sexual deviancy for a plethora of reasons. And so I think it sort of wisely and intelligently makes this connection between sexuality and the seductiveness of sin. And it even stretches that out into the realm of demonic influence. And I think there's something fascinating about that. But the unfortunate reality is that you can say all of that stuff and make those things interesting without doing it in the way or with the, you know, hopeless absurdism that Evil does. And I understand that this absurd approach to the storytelling is part of what we might call the show's charm. That's probably the thing that has helped it carve out a niche on streaming. But again, I just don't think it explores this stuff as well as it could. I can think of episodes of The X-Files, which really are very similar to this, that deal with the same content, but in infinitely better ways, with more class, with more nuance, and with infinitely more restraint. And that's because it's working under these network censors that you just couldn't get away with doing anything you wanted to, and that forced writers to be a little more creative than just doing what they wanted. So on that level, I think it's a double-edged sword, the freedom of streaming. It's sort of, as much as it allows you creative freedom, it also allows a lot of lazy writing. And I think, I was just talking with someone recently about this, I think a lot of streaming shows, which kind of launch all at once and that you know you're going to binge, a lot of these episodes that are an hour long just stuff in content for the sake of content that doesn't really add anything to the narrative because they're not having to confine themselves into telling a story within, you know, 45 minutes. There's a lot of just wiggle room or stuff that just doesn't, just unnecessary stuff that doesn't need to be in there. And especially once Evil goes to streaming, you start to see some of this. It's just, you know, I don't need to sit there and watch for the third time a conversation between a succubus that wears a retainer with Ben. You already know how it's going to go. And so it sort of shoots itself in the foot in that regard.
Well, I do think it's interesting. I don't know. Did they show the actual demons in season one? Because by the time they get to showing demons in season three, so what's so great about the internet is now I can just, the only things I watched were fast forward the first episode and then just kind of like what happened at the end of the season. And they show a few clips of season three, and the clips that they show various demons and like a demon baby, but it looks really campy. I mean, it looks like these campy puppets, I guess. I don't know if it seems scarier
when I was watching the first season and those things started happening, in the back of my mind, I was going, are they trying to make it look goofy? Because that's what it looks like. And then as you go on, you realize that, this is what they're doing. It's intentional. There's a level of absurdism to this that it's really leaning into. And, you know, different people are going to get different mileage out of that. I personally don't like it. I think I told you when we were first talking about covering this, that I never thought I would say this, but I just wish the show would be darker. Instead of doing this absurd stuff, I wish it would just commit to the darkness of the subject matter and deal with it on a little more serious terms. I think it would actually have more interesting things to say than leaning hard into the absurdism of some of this stuff. And you mentioned showing the demons, and I will point this out. One of the things that I find very interesting about the show is that the demons that you see, and they do look as, you know, campy as an 80s puppet, the demons that you see actually tend to be some type of expression of a metaphor. So you talked about the succubus. Well, when David, spoilers, when, if anybody cares, when David encounters the succubus at the beginning of season 3, and he sort of wrestles with it throughout the entirety of the season, it's never explicitly stated, at least from David's perspective, it's never explicitly stated if what he is witnessing is an actual demonic entity. What it could be, and what it sometimes suggested is it is just a fantastical outworking of his forbidden attraction to Kristen, to Dr. Bouchard. And so there's almost two ways of reading it, where David, as a religious person, reads it and says it's a demonic entity, whereas somebody like Kristen looks at it and says it's really just a psychological phenomenon that you're experiencing. And that's one of the things that the show does from season 1 to season 3, it maintains consistently, is you meet characters or you encounter moments like that where, from David's perspective, you're looking at it and you go, well, that's a demon. But from Kristen's perspective, you look at it and go, this guy's just nuts. And it toes that line in interesting ways. And this is part of what I said earlier, where on one level, I think that is fascinating and I think it is interesting. But on another level, when you consistently do that throughout the entire run of the show, and you never begin to hint at what is really going on, well, then you're just sort of stringing your audience along, and what you haven't done is clearly define the phenomenon from a narrative standpoint. You haven't clearly defined what's happening. And as a result, you really can't say anything profound about it because you haven't really defined what it is. So the most you can do is just sort of have the characters talk about it and put the impetus on their emotional reaction. You know, this is always one of the great complaints about the X-Files, to keep going with the parallel, is that, well, you know, Scully has her doubts about things, but over time you start to realize that a lot of what Mulder believes in is sort of right in a way, because you start to see glimpses of a bigger picture that plays out throughout the course of the series. But in doing that, the show begins to explore more interesting ideas and begins to challenge Scully's skepticism on a whole other level that evil just hasn't gotten around to, because it keeps trying to toe the line between, is it real? Is it not real? Is it actually a demon, or is it all just made up? We don't know.
Well, I will tell listeners that the demons that they show are on the campy side, and they remind me of the evil gremlins in the Gremlins 1980s.
It's a fantastic Christmas movie.
That's exactly what they look like. I mean, I would think the CGI, they could make it better, but they are using some kind of puppets, so it doesn't look particularly frightening once you see them, you know, kind of gathered round or whatever. Well, one of the other themes of the show that I want to ask you about is the whole way it handles guilt, because there are various characters dealing with guilt. And one of them is the main character, who's the skeptic, Dr. Kristen Bouchard. And she's dealing with guilt of some things that she has done. And then also in season 3, there's this just heavy guilt. We talked about sexuality that's portrayed, but one of those things is, you know, the Catholic priest is dealing with lust and his, you know, like you said, is it real? Is it imagined? What's happening? We don't know. Is it fantasy? Is it demons? But, you know, lust concerning an attraction that he has towards her, Dr. Kristen Bouchard. And so Can you tell us a little bit more about how the show is wrestling with this idea of guilt? You know, you see in season three, he's praying at his bed, Lord, help me. You know, he's feeling guilty over lustful thoughts. So does it say anything meaningful about guilt? And then how does it deal with how you deal with guilt? Is there any way to be free of guilt?
Yeah, this is a really, really interesting idea. So the Kristen and David, being the two primary characters, each have their own approach to this. And guilt really is a driving force in this show. David's guilt, at least in the early seasons, regarding him, this, I guess I don't know if it was an affair. I don't know if she was married, but he basically sleeps with one of the church's lawyers. And so he has a lot of guilt regarding this, considering his circumstances going into the priesthood. And his guilt is sort of literally crippling at one point. And there's a whole couple episodes that deal with this. But his guilt is over this sort of lust, which you see come up again with Kristen. And then Kristen's guilt, I think, is probably the show's strongest storyline through the first two seasons. And at the beginning of the third, it was the only, I'll say it was the only sort of storyline that I even remotely kind of cared about. When the show begins, Kristen is helping more or less prosecute this individual named Orson LaRue, who is a serial killer, and she's evaluating him and all of this stuff. And what ends up happening is he goes to prison, but his defense has a lot to do with being possessed, which is sort of what draws her into this in the first place. Well, anyway, at the end of the first season, everything is overturned and he is released. And it's implied that he sort of begins stalking her, but he claims to have found God and he's remorseful for what he did. And there's a lot of back and forth there. Well, anyway, after Kristen feels threatened by all of this, she ends up killing him. She murders this man who she fears for her life. She fears for the lives of her children. And she does it in such a way that she thinks the police are not going to figure it out because she makes sure like his wife has an alibi so they don't blame her, but it keeps spiraling. And the entirety of the second season, she is eaten up by this guilt over what she's done. And it bothers her that she doesn't even feel bad for what she did because she feels that she has genuinely killed a serious evil person, the serial killer. And the second season really mines a lot of its drama and tension out of this storyline of her wrestling with this guilt. And of course, it sort of goes off into all these weird sexual expressions and it becomes goofy. But it sort of comes back at the end of the season and has Kristen going to David, who has recently become a priest, and confessing this sin that she's lived with the entire season and has sort of caused her to do all of these terrible things. So I think a lot of times people sin out of a sense of guilt, even if they can't put a fine point on what that sin is. I mean, when you're going through the second season, the police figure out it's her, but she's got a friend who's a cop who the moment you think she's going to get arrested for it, gives her an alibi and tells her like, everybody sort of is fine with what you did. We think that he deserved what was coming to him and we get why you did it. And they don't even arrest her for it. And that just adds to the guilt that when she's telling David, she says, I did this terrible thing. The police are even know about it, but they won't even arrest me for it. It's an interesting idea that a lot of her uncharacteristic behaviors in the second season are all a result of this underlying guilt where she has done something terrible, but nobody in the world blames her for it. And yet she cannot get away from this sense of having done something terribly wrong. And I think that is an interesting storyline. I think it's a good storyline. You sort of wish it wasn't so muddled by all of the other garbage that's in there. But I think it actually has a very profound idea at its heart that guilt is something that even if you can sin, you can have a grave offense and get away with it. But you have to live with that, and the guilt eats you up from that. And, you know, she goes to David and she asks forgiveness from God, but, you know, you're not going to find a really good articulation of the gospel and how it absolves you of that. In fact, I think in the second season, she's talking with David, and this is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard a clergy character in a television series say, which I don't even know why I hope that we're going to get anything better than this at this point from Hollywood. But she and David are talking about a situation, and she basically says, so what's the answer? And then mockingly, she says, is the answer Jesus? And David says, no, the answer is forgiveness. I'm going, well, that was probably the dumbest thing as a priest you could ever have said, because what you just had was a clear opportunity to articulate the gospel and explain how Jesus links to forgiveness and how those two go hand in hand. But instead, in typical Hollywood fashion, you completely miss the point. You don't talk about Jesus, except in certain contexts when you don't even really have a good articulation of the Christian gospel. So the show has a good exploration of guilt. I would say it doesn't have a good exploration of the absolution of guilt. It's certainly not how Paul articulates the absolution of guilt and things like that in the New Testament. So interesting ideas, but you know, it certainly leaves you wanting more as a
So we've alluded to this in just talking about who the characters are, but this show does interact with three different religious beliefs, and we talked about the kind of like the three main characters: David as the Roman Catholic seminarian, and then Dr. Kristen Bouchard, who's a skeptic and atheist, and then of course this tech guy who's this kind of lapsed, non-practicing, you know, just nominal Muslim. So does the TV series Evil acknowledge any kind of differences between these belief systems, and do they interact with their faiths in any kind of meaningful ways or point out differences? Or are they kind of like, well, here are the religious guys together, and then this lady, she's a skeptic?
Yeah, this is one of the more interesting things that the show does. I think in the first season, there's actually an episode where a character is undergoing an exorcism, and a Muslim and a Catholic are called in, and they sort of have to work together to perform this exorcism. And it's a really interesting idea, and there's actually a lot of comedy in it, which again is one of the things I think works against this show. I think it's carved out a niche using it, but I think it would be more interesting and profound if it actually tried to play some of this stuff straight instead of making it a comedy every time you turn around. But the show does acknowledge the differences in beliefs in a way that is uncommon to Hollywood, and I appreciate that about it. There's not just this general vague talk of God. There's the Muslims who actually talk about Allah as Allah. There are the Catholics who talk about God in the context of Catholicism with, you know, a little bit of mentioning of Jesus and some talk about Mary. And then you have Kristen, who's the atheist. So there is a kind of interaction between faiths that you don't really see in a lot of series that touch on religious ideas. And in that respect, I appreciate it. But this is one of those instances where, again, you sort of wish the show would just commit to one direction or another in terms of what we're seeing, because it might then help the conversations be more interesting than just, well, here's what I think, well, here's what I think, well, here's what I think, and then who knows what it really is, but we solve the problem together. It just, after doing that episode after episode, it kind of becomes stale and annoying in that respect. So it does acknowledge the differences, and I give it credit for that. It doesn't try to do the comparative mythology thing and say, well, all religions are the same because they all play with the same ideas. It doesn't do that at all. That's not to say that the show embraces the Christian idea or the Muslim idea singularly, because it doesn't. But at least what it does is acknowledge that there are differences in the belief systems with regards to the adherence of those belief systems. And it doesn't even necessarily present the idea that those are what we might call reconcilable differences. There seems to be an idea that floats throughout Hollywood, and certainly in this culture, that, you know, all religions just sort of grasp at the same thing, and therefore all the perceived differences are reconcilable. Well, that just simply isn't the case. If that were the case, there wouldn't be differences in religions. It's just, it's kind of a goofy idea. And this show, to its credit, does not go in that direction. It sort of maintains that at least with regards to the people who are adherents to those religions, that there are differences, distinct differences between those religions and the others. So it's not an expose on that. It's not a discussion of that. It's a discussion of evil and how those different faiths sort of interact with it. But at least in that regard, it acknowledges there are differences between them.
Well, I want to talk specifically about one of the main characters, David, who's portrayed as this Roman Catholic priest, because that's one of the, you know, quintessential pairings. Like I was even talking about the film, The Exorcism of Emily Rose. It's always some kind of atheist paired with a priest or some kind of minister or something like that. And they're, you know, investigating something. But how is his faith portrayed in the series? And how is he portrayed as a believer? In other words, does he doubt sometimes God? And do they make any kind of statements about Christianity as a religion being particularly, you know, having certain absolute beliefs? Or is it kind of like, well, hey, this guy's a lapsed Muslim and David's wrestling as a Christian. And then here's this lady that's a skeptic. How does it really grapple with any Christian claims or what the Bible teaches at all?
Yeah, so I do want to point out what you pointed out at the beginning of that question, which is it's always a priest in these situations. You never see a Protestant in Hollywood. I think that's very funny. You never see a Protestant have to deal
with... Well, we do see Anglicans. We did see that in the Essex Serpent.
We did see that in the Essex Serpent, right. And that's a very British flavor of doing things. And it's always very high churchy. But you never see a low church Protestant in these kinds of situations. It just never happens that way. Because the face of Christianity to the world, whether we like it or not, is Catholicism. So in case anybody says, should you ever pray for the Pope? The answer is probably yeah, being that he represents you, whether you like it or not, on a world stage. That's just how the cookie crumbles. But David is a character that's sort of interesting. He, in the first season, he takes these hallucinogens that supposedly give him these visions from God. But he wrestles with whether or not it's actually God or just a hallucinogen. And I thought that was a fairly comical plot point, because he sort of stakes his life on this and has a crisis of faith when he realizes, oh, it might just all be in his head, which why would it not be? You're inducing these things into yourself. But as far as how the show portrays him as a clergyman, it's better, I would say, than many portrayals, as you and I have talked about in other capacities, where you always find some morally compromised, some seriously morally compromised clergymen. And one of the things that the show does is it will talk about the issues in the Catholic Church, the big ones being the sex abuse scandals and their treatments of minorities throughout history, things like that. Those conversations come up with David, and it's usually from Kristen, like basically asking him, how can you dedicate yourself to a faith that has an organization that is guilty of all of these things when you yourself are not like that? You seem to be a genuinely good person. And David has to sort of to navigate that world with his Monsignor and characters like that, who are sort of a little more politically motivated in the church than he is. And so in that respect, I think David is portrayed as sort of a good clergyman, which is what makes, you know, his little compromises along the way all the more frustrating, because they're sort of easily missable and easily avoidable. The biggest thing that I thought was just downright odd was the use of hallucinogens to sort of induce these visions of the divine. And, you know, I must have missed that in my own seminary class, because we never did anything like that. In fact, that would be considered very strange. So how much mileage you get out of him actually being portrayed as a decent Catholic priest is probably going to vary in the sense of how you like your Catholic priest. If you like him a little on the weird side, then David's an interesting character. But if you are, I would be very interested to hear how an actual Catholic clergyman responds to the portrayal of David, because it's clearly deeper and more nuanced than what you usually see, but it certainly has its own dramatic quirks for Hollywood's sake. There's a lot about this show that I just don't know what to do with. You watch it and you kind of go, well, I'm glad that's over.
Well, I also want to talk about how the show is handling demonic activity in the context of the characters, because it's obviously, by its title, trying to explore evil. And I do want to talk a little bit more about just the word evil, the nature of evil, what we think is evil and what we think it means. But first of all, I want to just ask you about how it's handling demonic activity. Is it making light of it? Is it, because it's kind of like you said, in with some of the characters, are they real? Is this person a demon? Is this person Satan? Is this a hallucination? There's just this blurring of what some of these activities are. That is it saying that we don't know if it's there are demons, but yet there's so much focus on demons, or come see if this house is, you know, demon possessed or things like that.
Yeah. The one thing the show does in this regard, as we've said, is it sort of blurs the line between reality and fiction. You don't really know if what you're looking at is a dream sequence. You don't really know if what you're looking at is truly demonic activity or just some type of psychosis. And there's a lot of dramatic tension in that. There's a lot of sort of leaning in and wanting to know what's going to happen next and try to discern what's real and what isn't. But this is where I say I wish the show would commit. And maybe at the end of the third season, that is sort of what it was setting up, is that it is committing to one direction or another, but we don't really know. I mean, for all we know, it could be a dream sequence, and I'm not going to watch the fourth season to find out. I'm kind of done with the show. I binge watched it for this, and I'm never going to watch another episode of it. But at least from what I've seen, the show keeps a serious bifurcation between true demonic activity and what we might call, again, I guess just psychosis, because that's really what Kristen's character is there for. David goes to her to help him differentiate between these cases. And so there's a lot of back and forth between them in the more procedural episodes of what they're investigating. In that respect, no, I don't think the show offers any kind of compelling argument for demonic activity in the world. That being said, I think what the show does well is it does not allow its characters to simply say the devil made me do it. In other words, the idea of human agency and choice is always there. And it actually has a very interesting, if we accept the idea that a lot of this stuff is demonic in the context of the show, then what the show is sort of doing is suggesting that demonic activity is actually quite subtle. It's almost like the antithesis of The Exorcist, which deals with, you know, the spinning heads and the crawling up walls and stuff like that, to suggest that demonic activity is actually very subtle, and it takes an inch at a time until it possesses a mile. And you see this with Kristen, who sort of makes these, it does a very good job of showing how these little moral compromises she makes lead up to her doing something truly terrible. And you sort of sitting there as an audience member going, wait a minute, is she possessed or something like that? But she makes these little compromises early in the first season. For example, she begins, in order to sort of beat Leland at his own game, she begins bending certain legal rules. She begins doing illegal things. And they're not even necessarily lies, what she's doing. She's just sort of helping her situation along. I'll give you a really concrete example of this. There's a few episodes in the first season where she tries to record a conversation with Leland, but the tape sort of screws up in the middle of the recording, and you don't know if it's demonic activity or if the tape is just deficient. And she takes it to Ben, the tech guy, and she tells him the conversation that she had with Leland, what Leland said. And Ben sort of offers to remake that conversation for her, but using his own voice, using like voice modulation. And she has this moment of crisis, of moral crisis, where she says, I know that this is unethical, but I'm not lying. Like, this is what he said. Is there a way to sort of really help my case here by doing this? So she goes ahead with it. And so those little compromises throughout the course of the series lead up to these terrible, you know, major compromises later on. And then she has to live with the guilt in that lead to these other compromises in other areas of her life. And so if we accept the fact that that is sort of how the demonic works, it's a very subtle approach to life. And I think that's fascinating to think about. I think it is probably, let's say, accurate for many people in the world. However, my one gripe with the show is that you could just look at it and go, nah. It never really lands definitively on one way or the other. So it certainly operates under the assumption that the demonic is a possibility, but it never, at least as much as I've seen of it and how I understand the show going, again, in the next few seasons, this could all change, but as much as I've seen of it, it never comes down definitively on a position with demonic activity.
Well, before we wrap it up, I do want to have a very brief discussion about evil itself, not the TV series, because of course this is named Evil, and that's provocative. So just the topic itself could get people thinking about the nature of evil. Now, in Christian apologetics, there's typically the quintessential question that we have dealt with in many Christian Research Journal articles is, how do you deal with the problem of evil? I think that's less of what I want to talk about. That could be a series of podcasts. That's a huge question. But more about defining evil itself from a Christian point of view. And so one thing I want listeners to know that as Christians, we believe that beings, created beings like angels and humans, are morally responsible. We have moral responsibilities. And I think we were talking about this a little bit before we started the podcast, just about the definition of evil. I like how Augustine puts it, that evil is not a substance. It's a lack of goodness or a deprivation of goodness. It's a corruption of godliness, and goodness is something that's a substance, not in the way that we think something is a substance, like a chair or anything like that, but because God himself is good. And so basically evil is a lack of goodness, and that can be manifested through actual sins, but also just how do you define it?
Yeah, this is one of the questions of theology. Defining evil from a biblical perspective. Augustine, whom you mentioned, is sort of a classic church father to turn to for a good definition of this. C.S. Lewis and the other Inklings will really, I think, pick up on Augustine's description and definition of evil to take it a step further. C.S. Lewis would agree with the assertion that evil is a lack of goodness, but I think more precisely, Lewis would say that evil is a corruption of goodness. And my understanding of this definition, and I'm partial to this, sure, I like this idea, is that, you know, if we go to the beginning, we would say the only being in existence, the only self-sustaining being in the universe, is God himself. And it is not that God is morally aligned to goodness. I want to be very careful how I say this so I'm not misunderstood, but that goodness is just part of the character of God. In other words, the character of God is the thing that defines goodness, and not the other way around. And so we would say that anything that emanates from that character is good. Therefore, the creation in Genesis is good, not because goodness is an abstract concept out there, but because God made it and declared it so. Evil then steps in as anything that perverts that or is not that. And it's a very hard concept, I think, in some Christian theology to nail down, simply because evil is so frequently defined with pettier examples or defined by what it is not. Evil is essentially defined as not goodness, or I guess you could broaden that to say anything that is contradictory to the character of God, I think would probably be a better definition of that. And I really do like the idea that Augustine proposes and Lewis would, I think, develop in more interesting ways, which is that evil is not just a lack of goodness, but it is goodness corrupted. It is goodness bent and twisted out of shape and made into something that it was never intended to be. And I think as you read Scripture, the overarching narrative of Scripture from Genesis to Revelation, you really begin to see that. I think you can see that in sexuality especially. It's not that all sex is bad. It's that there is a good application of sex, and we would call sin the perversion of that and the twisting of that in wrong ways. I use that example just because it's one of the obvious, most easiest ones to use, especially in this culture. So that, I think, is a good beginning to the discussion of what evil is from a biblical perspective.
And I think just with the fascination of horror around this time of year in October, it's something that, you know, Christians can show that there is an answer for that. You know, okay, let's say it's, you know, what this series is saying. Well, is it mental health? Is it demons? But all of those questions that people wrestle with, that they deal with depression, or they're haunted by guilt, or whatever else, they see evil acts in the world and it's overwhelming them, that Christianity has answers for that. There's hope for that in terms of what the Bible teaches. And unfortunately, we let culture define what Christianity is. And this is another example of culture defining what Christianity is instead of really going to the Bible and defining Christianity. So I think there's a great way that people can use this to talk about spiritual truth and be like, hey, you know, if you're a fan of the show, guess what? It's interpreting Christianity a certain way, but I want to tell you what Christianity is really about. I think there's a lot of doors that this can open in talking about spiritual subjects with people who are fans of the show.
Absolutely. Evil is a, like you said, it's just a provocative title to begin with. And at its heart, the show really is an exploration of evil in the modern world, for sure. It just, I wish it had a different lens, so to speak, of looking at it. And that is where Christians can step in very powerfully. Not just Catholic Christians, right? Because that's the perspective you're getting on the show. But Protestants can step in with a very clear biblical hermeneutic and can talk about these things and discuss these things in very interesting ways. And you're absolutely right that there is no better time of year to do that than the Halloween season.
Well, finally, on a much lighter note, I have a fun rapid fire question for Cole, but maybe this isn't a fun question because it's lean into our theme. You talked about watchable horror for Christians that's thought-provoking and not as profane as this series. So, well, is there a film out there that you can recommend? I think, you know, you did recommend The X-Files, but that's a lot of episodes for people to get into. Is there something that they could watch instead and maybe, you know, interact with someone? If evil's one of their favorite series, hey, let's watch a different film together and talk about these issues.
Wow, this is good timing. I will say I'm a huge fan of the classic Universal monster films. I think they have brilliant explorations of the monstrous. I think they have brilliant explorations of grace and tragedy. And they're very clean. They're very clean. And I could suggest those. For those who really want some terror, I will say the 2015 film The Witch that Robert Eggers did is a film that scours your soul in the best of ways. At least it did for me. It's a terrifying film. It is also one of the best portrayals of Satan and evil that I have ever seen. And it is genuinely terrifying. And as far as books goes, if there are readers out there, Tracy Groot has a novel called Madman. And let's talk about demonic possession. It is a fictional account of the man from the Gadarenes that Jesus heals in the Gospels. Brilliant story, brilliantly written finale, but scary along the way. So Tracy Groot's Madman, if you're really into horror films and want to be scared, The Witch. But if there's anything else I can point anybody to, it's going to be some of those classic monster films like Dracula, and Frankenstein, the Wolfman.
Well, thanks, Cole, for being a guest again on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Always a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
You've been listening to episode 309 from the Postmodern Realities podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Journal. Today we spoke with our guest, Cole Burgett, who has written an online exclusive television series review for our journal. His article is called The Devil and Kristen Bouchard, a series review of evil. And our subscribers can read his web-exclusive review at our website, equip.org, for free. For those who do not already subscribe and would like to do so, please go do that also at our website, equip.org. Stay connected with the Christian Research Institute and all the new content we have coming your way. The best way to do that is to head on over to our website, equip.org. There you will find thousands of free resources right at your fingertips, from articles to video to audio, and it's all for free. You'll find our podcasts hosted there, as well as the Bible Answer Man broadcast, which is hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and streams live every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. In addition, you don't want to miss out on subscribing to Hank Unplugged, which is the podcast of Hank Hanegraaff. And in that podcast, he has really in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people. And in addition, he has a new series on his podcast feed called Hank Unplugged Shorts, which Hank goes into the headlines in the mainstream media and refutes a lot of those cultural issues that we have in these short podcast episodes. And there's quite a few of them. You don't want to miss out on them. Now, if you want to find some of this at other places where it's all in one place, really subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's a great way to get all of our content there, our podcasts there, and different individual questions theologically that people have that Hank answers at our YouTube channel. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, I don't know how to subscribe to YouTube. I don't have a YouTube account. Well, actually, you might just have a YouTube account. If you have a Gmail address, you have a YouTube account. Just log into YouTube with your Gmail address and search for Bible Answer Man channel, and please become one of our subscribers. In addition, if you see that bell icon right there on our front page, please click that, and every time that we have new content, you will receive a notification that new content is up on our channel for you to be able to consume. So thank you so much for the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute. We are grateful for you listening and reading and watching.